I think sometimes we can separate character and family life from competence, and that is dangerous. Actually, the two go together. So we've always had the policy of supporting the family life of a staff member.
For example, what does that mean? Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIAC podcast. We're here on tour at the Hub Conference. My name is Adrian Reynolds, Head of National Ministries for the FIAC, and I'm here with two lovely people, Richard and Carolyn Lacey. Richard, you're in the top 10 of my favourite people I know called Richard.
As are you, Adrian.
Is that right?
Yes.
There is work to do on your... if you're watching, there's work to do on Richard's dress code. He's hoping to branch into floral shirts, and so if anybody would like to send him tips, catalogues, send them along to Woodgreen Evangelical Church.
That's
where
to be
you're
like
serving.
You, Adrian.
That's right.
That's the plan.
Exactly the right thing to say. And lovely Carolyn, hello.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. You have your DMs on.
I do.
Which you can't just put your foot up in case you're watching on YouTube. That is a class act. So you're a class act. I really do love you two guys. And I think I've known you, Carolyn, longer than I've known you, Richard, because
yeah.
I knew you from PT conferences. But every time I spend time with you, my heart is warmed.
Oh,
so thank you. And I thought what would be lovely to do is just to have a podcast where we talk about ministry life. So we often have podcasts where we talk about issues, how we deal with this, how we deal with that. But actually, it's just good to talk about ministry life, what it's like. Actually, on this conference, we've been thinking, haven't we, about how there's both cost to that as well as joy. And we all experience that. So it's just good to chat about life, how we got to where we are. And actually, in the last couple of years, you've gone through a transformation, two of you. Your marriage has gone through a transformation because you now work for him. Is that right?
I do, officially.
For the Lord, actually.
For the Lord. Thank you for putting me right. So we want to try and explore that a little bit. So, Richard, let me start with you. You're at Wood Green now. How did you get here? Short version.
So I taught for 6 years. I was a secondary school teacher of English and very enjoyed that very much. But really felt since the moment I was converted in my late teens that a sense of calling to pastoral ministry. So I think is quite unusual from chatting to,
yeah,
to others.
From that age.
But also
very Spurgeon-esque.
I guess so, yes. Although I haven't got it to beard. I think I was also very aware, though, of how awesome the responsibility was, and so was waiting really for others to acknowledge that and spot that gifting before I acted on it.
Yeah.
So I went into teaching and did that for 6 years, and then a couple of guys, really respected Christian leaders, came across my path and spotted a gift, a pastoral gift, preaching gift. The church I was in at the time said, the senior pastor said, look, we want to set you aside for this and help you train for this. The church recognized that. And then, I trained for a couple of years, doing a correspondence course, bit of training on the job. And then they took me on as an assistant pastor, and I was there for 5 years in Bristol at Kensington Baptist Church, working with Andy Patterson, who was my boss, mentor, friend, and then moved on from there to Worcester, where we are now.
How long have you been there?
17 years.
Okay, it was a good stretch of time.
Yes.
And lots of excitement in that period. In fact, yeah. You just planted. Well, it's funny because I saw the guy who's leading the church plant from Wood Green just the other day, and I said, oh, how was your first Christmas together? And he said, third Christmas, because
yeah.
Time goes very quickly. So you planted into Droitwich, neighbouring
yes.
town.
Yes, a town of 25,000,
yeah.
And about 40 of our guys went, one of our pastors, two of our elders moved, and we were there just a few weeks ago, and it was just a joy to see about 60, 70 people there. It was just wonderful to see what God's done.
And Carolyn, you've been with him all that time.
I have, yeah.
When you first met him, did you know this is on his heart?
Yes.
To be in ministry. Did that phase you at all?
No.
It didn't bother you at all?
No. So I similarly knew from fairly soon after I was converted that I wanted to be in full-time ministry. Because I was a girl in the 80s and I didn't assume I'd get married, I thought it would probably be on the mission field because that's what women seemed to do. And so when Richard asked me out, he said, you know, you need to know that this is where I'm heading. So I'm really asking you if you'll do this journey with me. So he was very upfront and I was very happy to say, yeah.
I'm glad he was up front. That's good news. Now, I guess you could, I don't know all the details, but I guess you could say that your role's been fairly clearly defined at each of those stages. Mm-hmm. Your role's been quite fluid and changed, and you've had lots of different responsibilities and services, both at home and in the church. Just give us a potted history of how that's changed over the years, Carolyn.
Yeah, so in our first church, I needed to teach full-time to get Richard through training.
Right.
So I was as involved as I could be, but had a lot of responsibilities at work.
So he was an English teacher. What did you teach?
Oh, I was maths.
Okay. Ooh.
So we've got it covered between us.
All you need is a bit of science and you kind of your household is just right there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you taught, so you were sort of basically supporting that work.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
He was working.
I needed to take a promotion in work to support Richard. So it was quite an intense period. The church were so kind and understanding about that and gave me opportunities when I could take
But didn't
them.
Overload you then at that point?
No, okay. No, they were so generous. And then when our children, actually I stopped teaching as soon as Richard qualified, so a bit before our children were born, and worked alongside him unpaid and
right.
just was happy to do whatever. So we've, apart from those first training years, we've always considered ourselves in full-time ministry together. It's
right.
just that mine's
okay.
been unpaid.
Yeah.
It's mainly been women's ministry, music ministry.
You are a fantastic bass player.
I'm really not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you play an instrument, Richard?
Not
this
really.
Isn't us ganging
not
up
really.
On you,
no,
by
I play
the way.
A little bit of the
You're
piano.
A great preacher.
He's a good singer, actually. He's a much
Is he?
Better singer than me.
Okay.
Yeah, much okay. better.
Don't ask me to sing.
So I had a variety of things to do. And then when we moved to Worcester, our children were 1 and 3, nearly 2 and 4. And again, the church were patient, gave me time to work out what I wanted to do, what I could do. And I wanted to get involved. And so fairly early on, I think within a year, I took over the music ministry and the women's ministry and basically did that for 15 or so years in an unpaid capacity. I also tutored and taught piano on the side just to help us out a little bit. So actually it was, looking back, it was very intense.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
I basically
So he
tried
was juggling
to do
one job, you were juggling five.
Yeah, yeah. And I had other kind of things going on increasingly outside of church. So looking back now, probably the last 3 or 4 years before I joined the staff team were quite intense.
Mm.
And so actually joining the staff team 2.5 years ago has been a real blessing. It's streamlined my focus. So I work primarily with women in church, head up the women's ministry, which I love. And we have great women in our church. So do that, but I've just stepped up to 3.5 days a week. And then I leave a bit of time for some outside ministry.
Right. Can we come back to that in just a moment?
Yeah.
I want to pick up on something you said with Richard, because it's very interesting you describing how two different churches were very kind to you and patient.
Yeah.
That's really important, isn't it, Richard?
Yeah.
That actually we need to look after staff well, those who are employed by the church, which means we need to look after their families well, spouses, children. Mm. That's a really important part of having a healthy church culture, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes we can separate character and family life from competence, and that is dangerous. Actually, the two go together. So we've always had the policy of supporting the family life of the staff member.
For example, what does that mean?
There's a high degree of trust on the start that I have with staff members
right.
over how they use their time. So if they want to drop their kids off at school, pick them up from school, I'm happy for them to do that within reason. You know, if they have responsibilities, they have to fulfill those responsibilities. Mm. But there's a high degree of flexibility so that they can be present with their families.
So they're not filling out timesheets?
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. And I think the benefits of that are that you have happier staff members because they're able to invest in their families. And part of that is a recognition that most staff members, most of those involved in pastoral ministry, they aren't set hours. And so they are going to be working a lot of evenings and weekends. And so you want to give flexibility because of that and honour that, actually. Otherwise, you end up burning them out.
Mm. And Carolyn, it's interesting how you were describing that sort of patience, because that patience seems to have been at certain stages not to expect too much of you because you had other responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that's important, isn't it, for churches not to put too much burden on ministry-wise, as you were in that case, to be an unpaid worker.
Yeah.
Take that for granted. It mustn't be taken for granted, must it?
No, and for us, that was something we both really, really wanted to do. Not all ministry wives do, and not all can. I mean, our situation is that I've got gifts that complement Richard's and that work well, and I have opportunities to use them. And we've also had children who don't have any disability or particular special educational needs, which I think has given us a greater degree, or certainly given me a greater degree of bandwidth than I might otherwise have. And those kind of things, you just have to be really sensitive towards and undemanding. And I've appreciated the fact that the doors have been open for me to run through if I wanted to, but I'm not being pushed through them.
That's really important, isn't it? Now, that's one way that a couple can protect marriage and ministry life in a ministry home. What are some of the other ways, Richard, that you've put in place, or, you know, either intentionally or just fallen into, that protect some of those boundaries that are really important for just retaining sanity and good relationships, good marriage, good parenting?
Yeah.
What are some of the boundaries you think that are important?
I think there are a number. I think preserving a day off is really important, not just for the refreshments, physical refreshment of you as an individual, but so that your children know they've got you.
And how does that work now you're both working for the church? Do you have the same, your day off is a day off for you as well, is it, Caroline?
Yeah, we've always had Saturday as a day off.
So you're not kind of passing as, oh, bye, ships in the night. You've got that shared time together.
And I think that extends into holidays as well.
Yeah.
So because, you know, as a lead pastor with the staff team, you are on demand a lot. When we're on holiday, it's important the kids know they've got me. The phone's not going to go.
Yeah.
Or if it does, I'm not going to answer it. Now, I'm in a privileged position. I have elders who can pick up some of the slack and other staff members. But actually, I just think it's so important for them to know that dad's there present, particularly on holiday. So we've had lovely family holidays. And that's been a credit to the church that they have, and to fellow elders who have allowed us to have that time.
Yeah.
So those are just a couple of boundaries, I guess.
I find now, I'm in a slightly different position from you, I guess, because, you know, you go away on holiday, but the church probably know you're on holiday. So if people call you, they certainly shouldn't do. I'm in a slightly different position in that people don't know I'm on holiday, the people I'm kind of serving, if you like. So I've had to start taking my SIM card out of my phone because that's the only way I can stop receiving texts on holiday, which I find incredibly distracting. It's not anybody's fault. They don't know I'm on holiday. But there are sometimes conscious things you have to do for that self-preservation, aren't there? You can't just assume everybody will fit into that. That's why it's so encouraging hearing about churches which are going out of their way really to make ministry not bearable. That's not the right word, because there's a great joy in it, but to make sure it doesn't become overwhelming, because it can become overwhelming, couldn't it? We didn't do that.
I think one of the other things that I've been very, very careful about is referring to children in my preaching.
Yeah, we're not going to refer to them now, other than in very general terms.
That's right.
Exactly right.
So not using personally, this has just been a personal principle that we've had. I've never used my children as a sermon illustration unless I've asked their permission, even when they were young, because they're not public property, they're not church property. And that's protected them a little bit, I think, and felt that they can have open time with us without thinking, oh, this might get used in a sermon at some point and made public. So it's preserved their privacy and our family time.
So I'm going to push back on that a little bit. Not because I don't agree with you, because I do agree with you as it happens. I'm slightly playing devil's advocate here. You know, there are people who would say, and I can understand this, that for, you know, the preacher, we want to see the authentic preacher. We want to see him in his, you know, in his good moments, and actually in things he doesn't get wrong. So actually a story about how I've upset my children and done wrong by them and had to ask their forgiveness. That might be a really good illustration to hear from the pastor, to hear that he's a real guy. So how would you respond to that?
Well, the focus there is on me, not on my kids.
Okay.
And it's on how I've failed and how I've screwed up, which I think is perfectly okay.
Thing. Yeah, not telling stories about them.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
You know, particularly embarrassing stories, which get a quick laugh, but actually leave the child feeling
It is those
totally
stories that go for a quick laugh, isn't it? Yeah, that are particularly damaging, I think. Yeah. And I mean, as a mum, did you have to nag him about that, or was he pretty
no,
good?
No, actually, it's been Richard's principal. So good. I mean, he doesn't mind telling the story about me. That makes me that's fine. Yes. Not often, but that's
I've
fine.
I've got a number here for the council of nine. That's available afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's just talk about that dynamics. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, a ministry marriage is an odd thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's full of joy and laughter and delight. But there are burdens, aren't there? Mm. There are burdens that you share. So just tell us a little bit, Carolyn, about how you've heard from Richard how he protects himself a little bit. How have you protected yourself and the family in the ministry home?
Mm. Yeah, I think the big thing has been having some really good ministry friends who are not serving in the same context as us, who I've met up with either annually at a conference or who I've got texts back and forth with, or who meet up, who I can just say, this is really hard, or this is a weighty thing, and can maybe just share a little bit more of the general type of thing, because they're so far removed. Nobody's going to guess who or what I'm talking about. So that's been really important. And particularly, I think when the children are younger, or maybe it was just that they were the early days of ministry where everything felt a bit more weighty. And I feel really thankful for more experienced ministry wives who in those early days just got alongside me, checked in annually at a conference or via message, and were just a source of wisdom and encouragement. And, you know, in the same way that Richard can't share with me all the pastoral things he's dealing with, I can't share with him some of the pastoral things I'm dealing with. So to have somewhere to go to offload a little bit and to ask for prayer has been important. I have got friends in the church family who I can say, it's a weighty week, will you pray? And I think that's important to have people in the church family who know we're feeling a bit under pressure at the moment and who are loving us well and praying for us well. But obviously we don't go into details there. So I think that's been probably the main thing. And I think for me, understanding the burden, I said to Richard, I can't remember, it's about 5 or 6 years ago now, I would say my glass is generally a little bit fuller than Richard's is. And I think I said to you...
Sounds like you're describing my marriage.
No, it is.
Yeah.
And I think I said to Richard something along the lines of, you're just always a bit burdened and it always just feels a bit heavy and there's no lightness. And actually Richard referred to a passage we looked at last night in 2 Corinthians where Paul talks about daily bearing the burden of the churches,
right.
and he just explained to me that's how I feel. It's not that everything's bad all the time, but there's just a general weightiness, and that was very helpful. For I felt a bit foolish that I've been in ministry quite a long time before fully understanding that, but that was helpful for me to understand there is a weightiness, and Richard carries burdens that I don't. I carry burdens in the sense of some of the things I know about people that are very personal and painful, but I don't bear the weight of the church in the same way. And so I think just being mindful of that and prayerful about that has been really helpful, actually.
I'm going to ask in a moment about how things have changed, if they have changed, now that you're employed by the church. But I want to ask Richard about how you got to that point as a leader in the church. It's a bit awkward.
Yeah, very awkward.
You know, saying, well, here's my lovely wife, Carolyn. She's doing all these things in the church. Now let's pay her.
Yeah.
Even though she's done them voluntarily up to now. What? How did that all come about? Yeah. What process did you have to go through? How did you make sure you did that with integrity with the other elders and with the church?
Well, we had a pastoral care worker who was a woman, and she decided to step down. And so it was an obvious time to think, well, what do we do with this role? And I think for a little while, some of the elders have been saying, we need a women's worker. Someone paid on the staff team, knowing that Carolyn was doing a lot of that work already. And it just seemed the obvious thing for the elders to say, well, we've got a pastoral care worker role now. Let's make it a women's worker role. And Carolyn is the obvious person to do that. Now, I didn't drive that.
Okay.
But once it became clear that this is the way we were going, a women's worker, and I knew Carolyn was basically doing the job, I kind of stepped away and said, okay, this is going to be run by our associate pastor now, and the elders are going to work on this together. But it just, I mean, from a personal point of view, because I could see that coming, and I thought, is this going to work? Actually, I'm going to be Carolyn's boss. How is this going to work?
With the glass half empty. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it'd be fine.
And so we had to do quite a bit of thinking about how we separate things, line management for Carolyn, so that.
Give me some examples. So
I don't authorize expenses.
Okay. Carolyn. Okay.
That's done by one of the other pastors.
Okay.
It's a light touch oversight, I would say, yeah. Isn't it? We don't have a one-to-one necessarily. No. I do with all the other staff.
Well, you do see a one-to-one, yes. Hopefully. but not for, I see what you mean. Yes, yeah. Not there's not a line management responsibility there in that way. Yeah.
And I think the other elders are heavily involved in engaging with you about what you're doing, aren't they?
Yeah. So there's ways of making it work.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds as though in some ways you're going above and beyond, but that's not a bad thing to do, is it? Because we want to be above reproach.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not just not open to accusation, above reproach.
Yeah. I mean, I should say there was a formal interview process.
Yeah, okay. Which is all a part of being above reproach, really. You're not just sort of pushing Carolyn forward and saying, come on, give her the job.
That's right.
So you can enhance our income. Actually, it's a proper, robust process.
And
integrity.
I wasn't involved in that at all.
Yeah.
There was a panel of elders who were involved in that. So it was... You know, I was slightly worried, how is this going to work? But I have to say it's worked really well.
Because, for example?
Because I think Carolyn is very willing to accept oversight, and because she's really been freed up to do the things that she's got a heart to do, which she was doing anyway, but she's now being paid for, and it's being developed in a way that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
So is that a difference for you, being paid to do the work you were doing voluntarily? But by the way, I'm all for that. I think that's a really good thing. The worker deserves his wages, her wages.
It's not so much the pay, it's the clear expectations and boundaries.
Right, right.
I mean, it is the pay in that I'm not juggling several jobs and feeling I don't know quite what's expected of me here. I mean, I was called the Women's Ministry Leader, but it's just different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think having a fairly rigorous application process, job description, I know exactly what I'm being set apart to do. I was going to have to get a paid job once our children started university. So I was thinking, I'm not going to be able to do all this. And we had actually talked about, it was anyone could apply from within the church. And we talked about, you know, somebody else might apply and they might get it.
Yeah.
Will that be okay? And I fairly easily got to a point of thinking, yeah.
You the glass half full, you were thinking that was all right.
It'll be fine, no problems there. So actually it's been nothing but gain. I feel like it's not that I do more than before. I'm focused. And in many ways, it's helped us be more boundaried.
Mm. So, well, that's interesting. Yeah. In what sort of ways?
Well, I'm in the room. So I know what I need to know.
Yeah.
And I know that I don't know what I don't need to know.
Right.
So before we had a bigger staff team, I was probably a bit more involved. We'd have, maybe it wasn't a staff lunch, but you know, the team would be round for lunch weekly at our home. I'd know what was going on. And then as a staff team got bigger and that became a formal thing, I wasn't part of that. And I tried to support Richard by supporting female staff members or spouses. But I was a little bit reliant on Richard to, you know, keep me in, what do I need to know? What do I not need to know? And so we probably talked about church and ministry a lot more than we do now. Mm-hmm. Now we...
Which seems counterintuitive, but I can see what you're saying.
I mean, we have a meeting with one of the other pastors weekly. So update then. I go to elders meeting about once a month to update. So we hear things formally. And then for prayer, you know, what are you doing today? What can I pray for? And a touch base if necessary. But we don't talk about church probably half as much as we used to. Mm. So that's been a win.
That's very interesting. It's a dynamic. I hadn't really thought about that. Mm. That actually, I mean, I assume, listening to the story, they must talk about church all the time now.
But really actually,
it's the other. It's gone the other way. Mm. That's very interesting. Yeah. Now, at the same time, the kids have gone off to university. You mentioned that earlier. Is that kind of, do those two things fit together, being freed up to be paid? Mm. Or do you think you could have done that earlier? You know, when the kids were sort of a bit older, perhaps were still at home, or is this a particular season where it really works, do you think, Carolyn?
I think I could have done it from, so our son was still at home for 2 years, so through A-levels, and that worked fine. And possibly I could have done it maybe a year or two before then, but not a lot before. I mean, you know that actually your kids' needs are more when they're older, and they need you in the evenings. And you know, that's one of the areas we've had to be boundaried. When the children were little, we were strict, so they were in bed by 7. Whatever meetings you want to have in the evening, fine, people can come. And actually, as they were older, the teens, you have to be a bit thoughtful about that. Mm. So probably it would have been slightly more challenging. Yeah, it's been timely, I would say.
Yeah.
But this is a bit of a what if question, but I'm interested in the answers. I'm going to ask you, Richard, anyway. This has all come about because a staff member left, opening came up, and all the rest of it. Do you think if all of that hadn't happened, but someone in the church had come and said, look, we're recognising everything that Carolyn does. We think really she should be paid for that. Mm. That'd be a good way to acknowledge it, to protect you in some ways. Would that, I mean, presumably that's not something you would have thought about at the time, but now looking back, would you say actually that's worth considering?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what Carolyn was doing was effectively the role of a wounds worker without being paid. And but also trying to juggle other jobs so we had a bit more income. When the kids went to university, we would have had, or Carolyn would have had to have got a job that paid more just to cover the costs involved with that. Yeah, so again, the timing was perfect for us. But it felt right in the sense that because Carolyn had been doing it for 15 years, there was an honouring there.
Yes, and that's the word, isn't it? It's about honouring it.
I would credit our elders for that. Mm. Actually, we have a fantastic set of elders at Wood Green, and there really wasn't at any point a risk in this whole process that it was going to be handled badly or that Carolyn was going to be dishonoured in the role. That was a real concern right from the beginning, and that gave me great peace about moving forward.
So actually, if you're listening to this, I mean, every church is in a different financial situation, but I think if there are people in the church who are doing more than just volunteering for things, if they really are serving, the Bible does say the worker deserves his or her wages. Mm-hmm. So certainly churches should be thinking about that at some level, even if it's not financially possible, perhaps do anything about it straight away. The church should at least be acknowledging that someone is working, you know, in a role really that in other circumstances would be paid. Yeah. And that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially for those who are giving a lot of time to church work. Yeah. And what next? You've been doing this job 2.5 years. No, I'm not quitting yet.
Not quitting yet, no.
No. And tell us what's encouraging you about that particular role at the moment, Carolyn.
I think what's encouraging me at the moment is seeing change, seeing spiritual growth and progress in women who I've got time to see weekly or fortnightly.
Right,
whereas before, you know.
So rather than just occasional conversations here and there, it's a bit more intentional.
Yeah, that's been really encouraging. Hunger for women to grow in their knowledge of the Bible and theology, that again, have had space to develop some teaching and do that. That's been exciting. So, yeah.
True to character, I should ask you what's discouraging you, but I'm not going to do.
I'm the glass third
just
full.
Not quite. I'm going to ask you a slightly different question. What's encouraging you about the women's ministry as elders in the church?
As elders, I think it's...
I'm not just asking you as a husband.
Yeah.
Right, you're a cheerleader for Carolyn, I hope. Yeah. But actually, as church leaders...
So we've recently had women start leading services.
Right.
That has been one of the most encouraging things I think we've seen in 17 years, for me personally. Did a lot of work to get to that point, to help people understand the role of women in the church.
Yeah.
But it has brought a new dimension to services, which has been wonderful, actually. And alongside that, Carolyn's work in training women to be more theologically literate has been fantastic. It's just been, it's been 1 Corinthians 12 in action, the body being released, every part of the body being released to do what they're gifted to do. That's been fantastic.
What a great advert. And it's a great story. Really delighted to hear it. I hope other people be really encouraged to hear it too, and perhaps think about how it might impact them in their churches and how they should reflect that. So thank you very much, Carolyn and Richard, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Go well. This has been Independence. Thank you for joining us. Do rate and review us. That helps other people find us. And we'll see you again soon.